In the last episode of Data Point, Dr. Geraldine McGinty talked about the bright and fascinating future of radiology and integrated diagnostics. Today, we're going to peel another layer from that fascinating topic as we explore some specific ways that integrated diagnostics, backed by powerful data and AI platforms, are being used today to transform public health, and not just in what we'd consider to be the developed world. Hello, and welcome to Data Point, the podcast that's about all the ways that data and analytics are driving innovation in healthcare today. I'm your host, Greg Matthews, and our guest today is Mark Pugnanita, a biomedical engineer and the co-founder and CEO of Phenomics. Just a week after winning the Advanced Diagnostics and Therapies Award at the Giant Health Competition in London, Phenomics has just announced a formal partnership with the Thailand Center of Excellence for Life Sciences to, quote, make matches between companies and research institutes in Thailand and the U.S. to encourage more interaction between different stakeholders in the industry, as well as fostering innovation and commercialization in the biomedical, life science, and medical device industries. Specific areas of focus include artificial intelligence, big data, and medical imaging, with potential projects including aging cohort studies, biobanking, and national dementia screening, as well as other highly prevalent conditions affecting the Thai and Asian population. Mark's viewpoint on the digital physical exam, portable MRI machines, and the value of full body imaging are fascinating. I'm sure you'll enjoy this conversation with Mark Pugnanita of Phenomics just as much as I did.
This episode is brought to you by Fallout 76, the post-nuclear RPG from Bethesda Game Studios. Explore the wasteland alone or with friends as you meet unique characters, complete exciting quests, and face dangerous foes. Take a stroll along the Atlantic City boardwalk in the latest update. Play Fallout 76 for free now through April 18. Available on Xbox, PlayStation, and Steam. Visit fallout.com to learn more. Rated M for mature.
Mark, thanks so much for being with us today on Data Point.
Thank you very much for having me.
So tell the listeners where you are right now as you're recording this, because you're a little hard to track down sometimes.
Yes, I've been traveling quite a bit over the last year, commuting between New York, Dubai, and Thailand. I actually just came from the conference in London on the future of medicine. And yes, I'm now here in Thailand, and it is a little bit later in the evening, but I'm all good. I'm okay with shifting time zones. So thank you for accommodating the time as well.
Absolutely. Well, it's I've been reading about your work and had an opportunity to talk to you about it a couple of months ago, and it was so fascinating. I'm really eager for Data Point listeners to get a chance to dive in. But before we talk about Phenomics, can you give us a little bit of your own background? You know, you're leading this new company that's really off to such an incredible start. How did you wind up there?
Sure. So I'm a biomedical engineer by education, and I've got two masters. So I started doing clinical trials right away, 20 years of global multi-center clinical trials. Started academic in New York at Columbia University. And we did all sorts of imaging techniques, whole body MRI, DEXA, X-rays, things like that. And I ended up spinning it out and doing pharmaceutical grade clinical trials, biotech as well. But these were global trials, quantitative imaging. And having seen the whole digital health environment ecosystem develop while I was in New York, Startup Health, Blueprint Health, all the new accelerator incubators, and even some of New York City, Mayor Bloomberg's EDC programs for life science initiatives and SBIRs, I always felt, well, MRI is not direct to consumer. It's translational research. How can I do it? How can I even, you know, move to SBIRs? Mm-hmm. So that was the first point of doing commercial imaging outside of the academic environment, because of sometimes that academic industry debate, shall we say. But the next point from there was this maybe almost, maybe we're coming towards digital health 3.0. Started to see maybe 4 or 5 years ago, everybody started to move to remote data capture, all of the apps, trackables, wearable devices that have come up. You started to hear about the Star Trek tricorder being invoked. But in my mind, well, it wasn't really scanning the body or imaging the body more precisely. It was looking at mostly superficial signals. And then if you combine that with what goes on with the physical exam, maybe you take some blood work, maybe you do some other things. Even if you do handheld ultrasound imaging, which is getting a lot of development, you're not really looking inside the body, taking the pictures, making the measurements, doing the things that could be the most impactful in my mind, having come from an imaging background. So that kind of led me to say, well, what can we do to essentially liberate imaging, not just from the hospital, but maybe a little bit deeper inside the hospital, the radiology department, and then even deeper further, the clinical trial industry. And I'll differentiate clinical diagnostic practice of radiology, where it is the radiologist's experience and expertise. I will never knock that. They are just tremendously powerful to me. But in the clinical trial side, we very much worked on the standardization, the reliability, the repeatability for studies even up to 500 sites around the world. So totally different mentality of an N of one, one person looking at one image versus how can we harmonize the data? Do we need to send phantoms? Do we need to do translations? And do we need to actually go on the ground and get to the locations and get them to understand what we want in the end as an image and not just rely on what they do at the scanner? And by all means, they're the experts on the scanner. So I would go in and, you know, be as beneficial and helpful to their understanding as they are to me using their scanner. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And so tell me about how Phenomics has emerged from that background. And it's really good context to have, but what actually is Phenomics? What is it that you're doing with this new organization?
So with Phenomics, we've moved away from the wider variety of imaging modalities from the clinical trial background and experience. And my other business partners are also biomedical engineers, having worked at Samsung, GE, medical device industry, project management experience, and things like that. So we have that foundation, that domain expertise. But rather than look at all of the different modalities, we've decided, because of this progression of the digital health field, precision medicine as well, which I speak on frequently, where we're taking the imaging and adding it to all of the genomics, the radiomics, and actually even beyond oncology into the rare disease fields. But we've gone ahead and said, well, why don't we focus on MRI? Because it's non-invasive, no radiation. We're actually working on the majority of techniques without contrast agents, so no injection even. And we said, can we take this modality, which where we can scan the body or the organs and tissues frequently, can we create a digital physical exam where we're directly measuring major vital organs and tissues, but this time from a whole body perspective, something that can be used not as a replacement for the physical exam, but as Eric Topol has referenced recently, in addition to the touch, the feel, all of the other data gathering, and make it something much more useful, a different way to look inside and make measurements.
But isn't it really hard to access the kind of equipment you need to do that? I mean, that's expensive stuff, and it's, you know, sitting in radiology clinics and hospitals. How do you get access to that kind of equipment?
So it definitely is a highly complicated scanner device. And also because of culture from medical industry and the administrative side of things, how the imaging facilities work, it is a bit difficult sometimes. But again, going back to that domain expertise, it's something where we've worked with them a lot. We know how to interpret the technology and translate it to the understanding so that they don't say, oh, this is going to be a 5-hour scan and it's going to cost 15 grand. There are definitely trends in the market that are changing things where there are price transparency, ownership of data, other things that are happening where I've even read, it's probably getting a little bit older now, some reporters have done stories on going in to get an MRI scan, for example, and asking at the point of payment, wait a minute, you know, how much is this going to cost if it goes through insurance? And, you know, the secretary looks it up, billing person looks it up, and it's $2,000, $3,000. And he says, just out of the light bulb moment, well, what if I pay by my credit card or, you know, out of pocket? And the price, lo and behold, becomes like $600-$700. Well, in those examples, and there's one, I forgot the name of the facility, but there's one facility in the Midwest, and I'm sure there are more now, but they have a charge sheet on their website, on their wall, that's like any MRI scan, $600. I know of several other larger, you know, web search tools that will give the price by zip code, by location, that have, you know, kind of a membership component where it is really actually inexpensive. So the imaging facilities can make a profit not having to go chase down the reimbursement and give up the amount, that higher amount, because of that effort, and actually, you know, do well because of the pay-per-use. When we utilize it, we're also implementing things like shorter, faster scans, because our goal, our two goals, one, ideally we'd like to use imaging as a screening tool. Because it's one of the only ways to actually look inside your body, we'd like to possibly look inside, make the measurements, and these are actually imaging biomarkers from our clinical trial days. These aren't just, you know, predictions and estimates and guesses. It's not just data science. We're actually working at the fundamental level of, you know, measuring how much fat is in the liver or what is the volume of the hippocampus. So we want to use that to actually make actionable, decisive information that can help educate the consumer, the patient, whoever it is, and engage with their healthcare provider. Ideally, we would even look at this being the allied health team. For example, we've got a celebrity trainer in Beverly Hills that we're working with who, on the most initial phase, is interested in body composition. How much muscle is someone gaining and how much fat are they losing? Let's say if they're bulking up for a role or just slimming down for other reasons. That is something where they could measure and monitor that trajectory over an 8-week training period or something. And then from there, it expands to, okay, well, fatty liver is a silent disease. We could be young, thin, and healthy and not even know we have it. Would our normal annual physical or employee physical incorporate, you know, liver testing? If it's liver enzyme testing, blood work, perhaps it's only really telling you about the function of your liver. It's not quantifying the amount of fat in your liver. So via MRI, we actually would then be measuring the amount of fat in your liver. That is something then you could, you know, intercept the disease by diet and or exercise and do something about. And that's something that can replicate elsewhere. Sorry, please.
Yeah, and that, no, that's really interesting. And the thing is, it feels like what you're talking about is establishing a benchmark. In a full body scan, but being able to repeat that on some, at least semi-regular basis. I mean, are you going to have to start buying your own MRI machines and setting up your own clinics to do this much volume? Like how is that going to work?
Perfect question on a couple different notes, because yes, the goal with quantifying multiple organs and tissues is, can we establish a baseline for your body with as many different components as possible? And let me say that now when we're doing it based off of the existing MRI infrastructure. We're actually using a biomarker approach. So we're getting very specific information about the organs and tissues. When we do that, we're actually looking to establish that baseline and be able to repeat it. But because we're doing things like a 5-minute brain scan to be able to measure the volume and track over time, that makes it much faster, much more efficient. And our goal becomes, can we actually incorporate more of these organs and tissues? We look at the most precious time being that time in the scanner because of our background and experience. So let's say you tear your ACL skiing or playing tennis or just walking or hiking. You go into the MRI scanner, and if it's a 30-minute scan, you're only imaging that 1-inch little ligament. Because after the physical exam, you know, the orthopedic is saying, yes, your knee's loose, but perhaps we need to image it to decide, is it partially torn, fully torn? Do I need to replace it? So if you're in that scanner, well, then you miss the opportunity to do the baseline, check your brain, check your heart, check your liver, because what happens if something develops in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months?
Sure.
If you develop symptoms, well, then you're already progressing down that disease condition pathway. And then the imaging that's done will be after the fact. So in combining, let's say, a la carte at first, because when we image something like the brain and make the measurements, we're specifically looking for the volume of the subregion, the volume of the hippocampus. Mm-hmm. We're not saying we're going to look at every single possible condition in the brain. The microbleeds or the fuzzy lesions, at least for now, we're leaving those to the experts, the radiologists who have the experience in that. We're not looking for headline news-grabbing articles where some tech company has figured out a way to beat a radiologist, but then how come you don't see them dominating the medical imaging AI market the same way they do search? So we're using that stuff, data science, for automation, at least for now. We will look at and evaluate the other things later, because our second tenet is multiple organs, multiple tissues. As I know some other physicians are now interested in the whole omic approach and also imaging as data, because it's not just a picture. There's underlying information in the actual pixels and the image themselves, where even now, if you have a heart problem and you see the cardiologist, you have a liver problem and you see the liver doctor, well, the referring physician has to interpret both of those if they actually get the reports in their medical record. But what we're looking to do by scanning both of those organs, ideally at the same time, is rather than the 5 variables and 10 variables that they're looking at separately now in the liver and the heart, maybe there are an additional 12 and 14 that might give different indication as to what the combinations are leading to earlier diagnosis. Different diseases and conditions, maybe even rare conditions. So that's our second tenet.
Interesting. Okay, so we're going to pick this up when we come back from a break. We are going to take a quick break, but stick around because we're going to be right back with Mark Pugnanita on DataPoint.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up!
Crispy crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
All right, we are back on Data Point. We're talking today with Mark Pugnanita, the CEO of Phenomics. Mark, when we went into the break, you were talking about something that's really interesting. A patient that has a scan of heart and a scan of liver that are being looked at by separate specialists, but at some point that the primary care doctor, the doctor that's the referring physician, is going to need to be able to interpret both of those things and ideally be able to do that contextually so that the connection between the two is actually made. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that happens and, you know, maybe even the ability today for referring physicians to interpret that kind of data if they had it?
Yes, two good points and questions here. So when we're doing our imaging, we're very specific in doing quantitative imaging. So rather than taking just a picture, and it's not to simplify it, but in general, the first look from the radiologist or the technologist that leads it up to the radiologist is, what does the anatomy look like? Mm-hmm. If they make measurements, they certainly use some of the tools on the scanner or workstation. And certainly there are plenty of other companies out there, AI or not AI enabled, developing their own biomarkers that do similar quantitative information. But I think for us, when we start with the standardization and the breakdown to get deeper into the information in the image, it's, for example, taking multiple images of the same anatomy, or, mm-hmm. you know, if it's a piece of fruit, we're taking different images at different settings of the MRI scanner and being able to offload it from the scanner and process it using different algorithms, not necessarily the fancy machine learning, deep learning type algorithms to figure out what's in the image, But algorithms that have been peer-reviewed, published, and validated, we do a lot of curation of the data where our past experience have utilized radiologists to trace and measure different organs. When we add and subtract these images, they actually give us results and values, either imaging data, what is the change in the signal of, let's say, homogeneous healthy liver tissue versus the signal is different when it's 25% fat or 50% fat in the liver. And so we then take that and either go off of the imaging parameter, the imaging data itself, not necessarily something that you're looking at compared to the amount of fat in the liver. So there can be the fat signal versus the imaging signal that when we start to process it, it becomes indicative of, is there inflammation in this tissue or this organ? Is there fibrosis? So it starts to expand the amount of information you can get just looking at the image. Looking at the heat map, which we produce that looks like an image. So it can be color coded. It can have the whole scale of different colors as opposed to just the black and white scale. And that's not unique to us. Everybody else that does image processing utilizes it in some form. But we're really wanting to, let's say, going back to that comparison to blood biomarkers and things like that, you know, yes, maybe there's a blood biomarker. And let me preface this by saying, I acknowledge that imaging is not the be-all, end-all answer. We have had discussions in the past with other blood testing companies to talk about collaboration and combined predictive scores, things like that. Because if a blood test is better at identifying there's a separation of inflammation versus fibrosis, and in this case for fatty liver and NAFLD NASH, well, that's a great staging and grading, but because it's a circulating biomarker, it doesn't tell you about how the specific anatomy looks, where if you can imagine this, we're scanning the liver in 3D. We don't want to just reduce that to a number and pass it off. We want to say, you know what? Now the number we can pass off to the radiologist. So if we want to, if they want to reduce their time instead of having to make their own measurements and say, well, you know what? This is 15% liver fat. It's over the threshold for fatty liver. Boom, there they go. They push that forward for the referral. But if they want to explore it and use that experience and expertise and say, you know what, this isn't 15% homogeneous throughout the entire liver. It's starting to collect in the left lobe or right lobe, or there's inflammation around the portal vein. This is becoming inflamed as a mass, maybe fibrotic. You know, this could be leading to hepatocellular carcinoma, and this should be referred on and something should be done about it in advance. And I will say that, you know, this is a case where the personal story touches home. My dad had the orthopedic surgeon retired. He developed liver cancer and had to go through all the imaging, chemoembolism, and surgery to have his liver resected. And the whole time I was saying, you know what, Dad, I'm an imaging expert. I do these clinical trials. Can I be part of your team to just even listen and learn? Can I get hold of the images? And that was not quite so successful. So very intriguing insight. So
it's a good example of how your team can work to bring out the, you know, to leverage your expertise and the expertise of the radiologist as well, to be able to go that extra mile. It's a good contextual example. One of the things that's going through my mind here, Mark, as we're talking about this, is what you're talking about feels like it would be really hard to do in the U.S. market, simply because our healthcare system is so fragmented. You know, the business interests are all over the place between different hospitals and different medical practices, and even the companies that are manufacturing the equipment that you're using, all that kind of stuff. I know that you're doing some work outside the U.S. as well, and you talked in our, as you're introducing yourself, about the fact that you're in Thailand and have been spending a lot of time there. Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on outside the U.S. that might look a little different than what you're experiencing here?
Absolutely. And I'll say, with the whole progression of digital health, and I think collaboration for the latest progress in digital health is a big marker. We are extremely collaborative, so I appreciate your kind of acknowledging our different take and view on it. Since we're collecting body parts, if you will. I'm always very interested in evaluating other companies. And, you know, sometimes when people ask me about competition, I usually end up saying, well, wait a second, let me go talk to them, because we have some very interesting use cases. We have some very interesting reasons for doing what we're doing. And more often than not, the perceived competition or the people that I speak to end up saying, oh, could we collaborate with you? Could we partner with you? And, you know, nowadays, especially with so many people from the data science and almost just technology perspective, working on open source data and being able to start startup and a new company, whether it's Europe, Asia, Middle East, Australia. Let's say somebody's developing a new algorithm for the lung. If we don't have something like that, you know, the traditional build or buy question, then I'm very interested in partnering with them, being very collaborative. And, you know, we can supply them with more lung scans or prostate scans or something else. So we would be very interested in collecting all these pieces and making it a better whole holistic solution, if you will, while also supporting, you know, other people doing the much deeper single organ and tissue focused work. Now, that leads into the aspect where, yes, in the US market, we're seeing early adoption. We have a celebrity trainer in Beverly Hills that we're working with. But going abroad, I'll give the example where I don't translate the language. Both of my parents are from Thailand and I was born in the US. So I don't translate the language in Thailand, but like I'm translating science, technology, and medicine, I'm translating some of this innovation ecosystem, commercialization, innovation to Asia, and, you know, seeing all of my travels in coming just from the ecosystem in London, France, Switzerland, and the Middle East, we're actually seeing quite a bit of adoption and interest. Having over the past year been commuting at least every month, I've canvassed about 15 different hospitals here in Thailand, some of the remote regions even, and we've really been seeing, because they have a public health system, they have medical tourism and a familiarity with a health screening. Even in the combination of a two-tiered system, Singapore, Japan, Southeast Asia, a lot of the other medical tourism high-end that comes down to this area, everybody's quite used to going to a doctor, even being bussed in, standing in a line, and getting basically your full medical workup. Now, what's the use of it? Do they just take it and go? We've got another advisor that we work with in this region who says, you know what? He's a firm believer in all the digital health solutions, continuous glucose monitoring, the Oura Ring, you know, everything. And he says, I don't want to practice transactional medicine. I don't want to have the client come in here and just gather the data and leave me. I want it for continued patient engagement to be able to identify that baseline. I want the data acquisition to continue so that I can see if, like Whitecoat syndrome or having higher blood pressure or higher glucose at one point in time compared to whichever norm. Is it a global norm? Is it a Caucasian US norm? Or is it an ethnic Asian norm? Does this person actually sit outside of that? Do they just, on a more continuous basis, even with a tighter variability, actually have a higher, you know, blood glucose or blood pressure throughout the duration? Remote data monitoring, real world data, these are all things to, you know, be utilized. Well, how about we use imaging for some of that too, for looking at that hippocampal volume change over time for dementia, the fatty liver change with disease or intervention, cardiovascular, things like that. So we are, having a lot of interest at multiple levels, private imaging facility, hospital, and Ministry of Science.
So when you talk about wanting to have that that view over time, is there an implication there that, you know, the patient is going to come in once a year for their physical and, you know, over a period of years, the data will be built up to see change over time? Or are you talking about something more than that?
It can be more than that. I think what we're trying to do is tailor it to the end user, the multiple stakeholders, at least at the inception. Being able to image more frequently as well possibly even more remotely. In coming from the UK conference and a lot of talk of genomics and UK Biobank, which does include imaging, quite comprehensive imaging with that, there's still a little bit of inherent bias in that it's healthy and wealthy and limited diversity versus what we've been discussing doing in Thailand, whether it's at those different levels that I mentioned. They're looking at possibly doing some individual biobanking, some national biobanking, even dementia screening, and being able to take that out into the remote regions, into the remote population. And when you mentioned MRI scanning hardware, yes, at least for now, we are working on the existing MRI infrastructure. But everything I've told you so far is just a pure software as a service solution. We're basically taking the MRI machine and making it a dumb machine. Technically advanced, but some of the new things that can be done are remote controlling the device, standardizing, offloading the data. And what will be happening in the near future, 18, 24, maybe 36 months off, not 5 years, 10 years down the line, is several different, I actually just saw a news article on a new portable MRI, I think in New Haven. But portable
no
MRIs.
Kidding. Yes. Oh, wow. So MRIs. You think of the about these things that take up a whole room plus.
Yes.
That's pretty amazing.
I won't say, I certainly would have to do more digging into the latest research, but you know, I'm not going to go so far as to say the tiny health kiosks and things like that yet. But knowing that there have been portable head-only CTs, the possibility even developed just in Thailand for distribution in Thailand, I think they are actually developing a new infrastructure. They have a whole Thailand 4.0 mission to change an innovation economy. So a perceived gap in technology and education, I think, is something that they can leapfrog, just like, you know, going to all mobile banking and giving and not even developing physical banking infrastructure, let's say in Africa, or, you know, everybody going to iPad or, you know, tablets and phones instead of laptops and computers. Portable MRIs, not just the 18-wheeler taking a traditional MRI and having to just put it in somewhere mobile that takes a week to set up. Right. These are things that would be liquid nitrogen instead of liquid helium, which is in short supply. Being able to turn on and turn off, having a smaller footprint in the back of a white box truck or a van, the remote control, even looking at whole body image acquisition, because that same concept becomes, well, rather than the current standard of care, you see the neurologist, he wants the brain, you see the cardiologist, she wants the heart, you see the hepatologist for the liver. Well, if they need that, then why not acquire as much data as possible? We can reconstruct the brain, the heart, the liver for their specific needs, but then the entire data and the baseline is there. So in contrast to, let's say, UK Biobank, the potential for Thailand could be a full public or private cloud system, maybe it's 5G even, where these portable MRIs could go out into literally the desert, the jungle, and the mountain. Not so much desert here, but, you know, other regions. But actually looking at that remote hill tribe or jungle village, getting a true capture of the population, even if it's only a sample of the population, there is so much more powerful stuff that we can do with the future of healthcare, future of medicine, by doing things like that.
That is fascinating. And it looks like another possibility, perhaps, for the developing world to leapfrog the current standard of care by really rethinking it from the ground up. That is fascinating. Please go ahead.
So that's an interesting point that you make there, because I happen to meet some very high representatives from the WHO and the WEF, the World Economic Forum, in Basel last month. And someone had asked or mentioned about educating their remote health, their remote workforce, trying to give them a little bit more of the medical education. And I actually thought, given some of the whole debate and question right now going on about how is technology coming in and trying to manage medicine, I actually took this person's remote education perspective of, well, how about we not have to educate them as much? How about we use technology for the technology purpose, not the medicine purpose, and do something like a remote controlled scanner, something that acquires the whole data. And because of the developments for telehealth, teleradiology, things like that, then it could be exactly like you said. It could very much change what happens on the front line. And as at the UN General Assembly, it turned out the Thai Prime Minister was at the assembly in New York. The same week I was in Thailand talking to Thailand, and they were talking about the whole healthcare for all initiatives, strategic development goals. So very interesting points that you reference, and I am very interested to see where all of this goes.
Absolutely. Well, it's hard to believe, but we actually have burned through a half an hour. I could do this all day, but given that it's quite late at night where you are, I think we're probably best to cut it short, but I definitely would love to be able to pick this ball back up with you, Mark, as things develop, because clearly things are happening pretty fast. I want for our listeners to be able to connect with you and Phenomics. If people want more information about the company and the work that you're doing, what's the best place for them to go?
Sure. So for me, on Twitter, it is M-A-R-K-P-U-N. The website is Phenomics, phenomx.co. And my email would be mark, M-A-R-K, at phenomics.co.
Fantastic. I will put all that information on our show notes. So in case you're driving your car while you're listening to this and can't write it down, it's going to be there for you. Mark, thank you so much for taking the time, especially in the midst of a really, really hectic week, to spend some time with us. It has been a lot of fun. And I know people are really going to enjoy having learned about Phenomics.
Well, I enjoy it too. Thank you very much for the opportunity and happy to follow up anytime.
Thanks so much for listening to the Data Point podcast. If you like what you've heard, please do rate, review, and share it with your social network. It means a lot. And if you have ideas for show topics or guests, please email them to me at greg@healthquant.health or send a direct message to @chimoose on Twitter. That's C-H-I-M-O-O-S-E on Twitter. For more information about this show or any of the terrific healthcare podcasts in the Touchpoint Media Network, check them out at touchpoint.health. See you next time.
Get the whole band together with Workday and pair finance and HR on one platform for an epic performance. With Workday AI at the core, you'll make confident decisions faster than ever, and you'll drive flawless business and finance operations with an agile platform that constantly evolves to future-proof your organization. Be a finance and HR rockstar with Workday. Visit workday.com to learn more.